Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. The 20th day of June 2017. It's West Virginia Day. You can celebrate by going out and, I don't know, poisoning your water somewhere, or maybe blowing up some topography or something like that. That's how we celebrate West Virginia Day here in, you know, almost level West by Coal Trump Virginia stand. Of course, unlike coal companies, you probably don't have a few million pounds of ammonium nitrate fuel oil explosives laying around to celebrate with. But, you know, just the same. Yep, we are West Virginia, beaten, blasted, burnt, blown up, tormented, what have you, is 154 years old today. Feels like only yesterday we were 153 years old. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. It's where we live. That, of course, is where you go if you would like to be part of the real-time multimedia madcap zany extravaganza that is the chat room during the 3 hours when the program is live every evening, 6 to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 3 to 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. If you do pick out a screen name and a password and wander on in, well, you will immediately be met by Anatole and Jug of Punch and Labor Man and Silent R. Lamar and Steve from Georgia Stand, V.T. Blom, and capably moderated by longtime, inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, even though he is a spacing guild master, seeing as how his portion of the planet is getting baked right now, and not in a good way, has chosen not to fold space this evening. And not, so you will see him in the chat room as Sparky. Just that easy. It is Titanic Tuesday on The Horn. Before we go any further, the usual housekeeping has to be attended to. This is a listener-supported broadcast operation. That means there are no ads, no hustles, no calls for you to buy sketchy, dodgy crap with an 800 number or anything like that. No Bose Wave radios or, you know, mattresses made of foam developed by NASA. No herbal erection capsules. No herbal hair regrowth tonics. None of that. No wood floors. No steel buildings. No wave radios. No vacuum cleaners. And it's amazing how much time pitching for all those things takes up out of a program. No, here you get something on the order of 180 minutes of actual programming. Not little 7-minute snippets interrupted by 6 minutes of commercials. Now, the upside of that is we're not, this is not a life support system for some capitalist enterprise. The downside of it is that it really does require your participation in order to work. The way we do it is we have a PayPal page at headonradionetwork.com. It's under the tab Contribute, and there's just a little form you fill out there, and you get done with that, then you get to the next screen, and the next thing you know, you're done. And it would be great if we could do some catching up this evening, because last night was kind of tough. Kind of tough indeed. So thank you very kindly to the overnight crew, Bernice and Ralphs and Carl. Well, we finished the evening last night at $190 to go. Shortly after the program, our buddy Horst kicked in 25. That took us down to 165. And our overnight crew of subscribers, namely Carl and Bernice and Ralphs, took it down to 140. So that leaves us with a fundraising goal of $340 this evening. And it's awfully, in a matter of absolute wonderful synchronicity, I just moments ago, like two, got a note from Don in Prince George, British Columbia. He said, "It's been a long time since I contributed, so I'll match up to the first $100. At the end of the program, I'll contribute using your page to a max of $100. So there's a $100 matching challenge on the table, which, if met, would knock out this evening's fundraising and leave us only with $140 to catch up with. So please don't let a matching challenge like this from Don in BC go by the boards. 10 at 10, 20 at 5, 5 at 20, you know the drill. And that's how we keep things on the air here. And it is a bargain. And it also, it has a certain... has a certain benefit to it, because nobody's gonna fire me, okay? In the world of terrestrial broadcasting, you could, for instance, have been broadcasting for years, decades, even, and then somebody comes along and says, "Hey, you can't say unhappy things about Geezer Disgustus, or we'll fire you." I'm not making that up. It actually happened. I mean, this guy, he's in central PA. He's in the part of Pennsylvania that's not Pittsburgh and not Philadelphia and therefore is Alabama. Pennsylvania, Tucky-sippy. You know what I'm talking about. A guy named, and it's Titanic Tuesday on the Horn, by the way. I should probably give the mailing address, too. The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, WV 25801, for those people who do not like to use PayPal. Boss Man Wayne is up and around again. He's got the spider-proof gloves and the axe handle in case he runs into a Klansman. And, shoot me a note if you're using the postal service, and that way I can tell Boss Man Wayne to be on the lookout. But it is Titanic Tuesday. It is, of course, a day which memorializes the Titanic intellect of the American right wing. Most of the time, we have some occasional overlap with other aspects of society, but that's its purpose. It goes back many years now to when to a time when Beckley, West Virginia, was the home of the most soporific monotone possibly in the nation. A man who, if his house was on fire, would have absolutely no inflection whatsoever in his voice. Fire. And one day it was that our buddy Jim was listening when Steve took a break from reading the newspaper in a monotone to his mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing faithful, and took a call from one of them and who asked him why it was that there were seashells in the rock formations in West Virginia. 154 years old today, West Virginia. To which he responded that there was it was a function of the movement of the Titanic plates. It was funny then, still funny now. Still no word on the movement of the Titanic salad tongs, but I'm sure they're down there somewhere. So Titanic Tuesday we use to take note of that sort of full steam ahead into the iceberg approach to intellect, have a disaster and have it faster, have it more profoundly, that is the right wing in this country. And so, yeah, the first story for this Titanic Tuesday does concern a radio personality. Mm-hmm. He's been on the radio in mid-state Pennsylvania since the 1980s. A guy named Bruce Bond. And he has had a program called The Bruce Bond Late Afternoon Show on an FM station, call sign WTPA-FM. And Bruce Bond wasn't trying to do political radio. It was nothing like what we do here. Yeah, for all I know, he was a Republican. I mean, he made his mark in radio, if such a term can be used. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. I have to get that out of the way. By making, if I understand correctly, he was at WNNK-FM, and he developed a following for the prank calls that he made. A mainstay of so-called zoo crew and comedy radio, making prank calls. Is your refrigerator running? Well, you better catch it! You know, and have you got Prince Albert in a can? All right. So he was just doing his thing there at WTPA. And a memo came down from the general manager or the program director or whatever. General manager Tim Michaels sent him a memo saying, "You can't say unhappy things about Donald Trump." And so Bruce Bond quit. It wasn't, and I know nothing about this guy, so I'm not exactly rushing to his defense. But he figured that it would be better to go ahead and quit now than sit around, as he said, or walk around, walking on eggshells, waiting to see when he was going to offend some Trumpanzee. Now, the fact of the matter is, while General Manager Tim Michaels, who very much wanted to keep his job, You might recall that program directors and general managers and the like were referred to as. You remember the Howard Stern movie Private Parts? You remember the character played by Paul Giamatti? WNBC. Pig vomit. Yeah. It's always a tenuous relationship between the talent and the program director and the talent and the general manager. But Tim Michaels sent down a memo saying, thou shalt not say anything not nice. Look, we even have to talk happy about Trump's twoopies. You get it? When you've talked about Trump, we've had people threaten boycotts and contact our advertisers. Well, shit, grow a pair. That's probably a little too gender specific, and I shouldn't. But you know, really. But that's what wingnuts do. You're not saying that Donald Trump is God on earth when he clearly is, and he loves Merca more than you Democrats do. I'm sure for instance, our buddy John in Central PA could probably testify, as could a couple of others. You know, there's a lot of Confederate flags flying in Central Pennsylvania, that sort of thing. They weren't so fond of that flag back around this time in, say, 1863. You know, 154 years ago. But now, you know, they've forgotten that whole little dust up, and sure. So Bruce Bond quit. Tim Michaels sent him an email saying, I've received backlash in the form of emails, phone calls, and such. And such? Really? What, did you get a telegram? Pig vomit. I've asked previously to cease political discussion. If this cannot be achieved, we will have no choice but to discontinue the show. Here's the thing, though. It used to be okay to talk about Donald Trump at WTP. What is it? WTPA. Toilet Paper America. But the owner of the station is a guy named Pat Garrett. And see, this is how it works. No, not Pat Garrett of Pat Garrett and Billy the Kid. This is Pat Garrett, who runs a sheepskin business. And I guess is into fleecing the people of Central Pennsylvania. But he's got a lot of billboards along I-78. Sycophus sheepskins, men's sheepskin coats, women's sheepskin coats, sheepskin jackets, shearling coats and sheepskin accessories, sheepskin etouffee, sheepskin burgers, sheepskin gumbo, sheepskin, bald sheepskin, fried sheepskin. You get the idea. And I guess these billboards are all over Central PA on I-78. Made in USA! But Pat Garrett is also a hardcore, I guess, millionaire Trumpanzee. And he even released a song during the campaign, Pat Garrett did, singing about how much he worshipped the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini. Right. So, you know, that's why we're here. Because, you see, there is a need for resistance in this country. Oh, I realize that, what was the official term here? Let me see if I can find this real quick. The story I saw earlier today. About how Silly Jilly is giggling, that's the phrase used, giggling, about Trump being, you know, president. And I saw some goofy-ass article over at Counterpunch about how there's no there with the Russian, with the Russia thing. Yeah. But the fact of the matter is, there is, and probably some obstruction of justice along the way. The resistance is real, and the need for the resistance is real. Because if the Trumpanzees had their way, Trumpanzees like Pat Garrett, they would do everything in their power to shut down dissent and debate in this country. I don't know if you realize it or not. Yeah, I've been going on since Moran Monday last week. I've been talking about the Julius Caesar business. Well, this past Friday, a couple of Trumpanzees actually stormed the stage in New York. Disgusting, really. Declaring that stop the normalization of violence against Republicans and Trump supporters. Shut up. Because see, I have here in front of me from May the 21st, 2012, a review in something called the American Conservative. Okay, this is not the Barricade. This is not the Socialist Workers Weekly. This is the American Conservative, a review of a staging of Julius Caesar in which Caesar was portrayed by a... da-na-na, black. And I mean, they assassinated the shit out of that black guy. I mean, they knifed him real good. And you know what? The precious little Trumpanzees were nowhere to be found back when that happened. And in fact, the American Conservative Reviewer said, well, you know, the black man who is portraying Julius Caesar it certainly bears no real resemblance to Barack Obama, so, you know, we really don't have to worry about anything like that. Rumpf. But, yeah, a couple of clowns, a couple of jackasses, Jack Prosobiec and Laura Loomer, who calls herself a right-wing investigative journalist and activist. Right-wing investigative journalist. That means she wants to see the birth certificate. The long form. The Kenyan version, goddammit. Rushed the stage and interrupted the production of Julius Caesar. I guess this would be the point in time where I mention that they're both white. And that's why we're not talking about another killing of another black person by police. They pulled a catch and release, the NYPD did, a catch and release on Loomer. She was charged with criminal trespass and disorderly conduct. because she wouldn't step away from the Delacorte Theater there in Central Park. She screamed, because of liberal violence like this, a congressman this week was shot in Virginia. Funny, I thought he was shot in the hip. Sorry. And, Laura, I realize you're probably, being a Trumpansy, otne ute itbre, if you one what I in me. But there was no liberal violence in that play. Because it was, a play. It wasn't real. It was theater. Yeah, but like ever so many Trumpansies, I guess Laura Loomer has a reality problem telling the difference between reality and unreality. I mean, hell, if she thinks Donald Trump is a decent human being, she's got a reality problem. Because, the actual evidence out there, the empirical stuff, suggests anything but. Sometimes I just can't stop myself. I have to just start kissing them. And you can do that when you're a celebrity. Grab them by the pussy. What kind of good human being does that? But now that we have the Trump family as our official arbiters of acceptable theater, let's see. I think we went over this before, but I just want to reiterate it. No Richard II. No Richard II. We can't have anybody doing Richard II in the United States and possibly have impressionable little Trumpansies hear dangerous, dangerous words. Horrifying words. Frightening words. Things like, let me find it. Won't take but a second. No one has a voice quite like that of Richard Burton. This is from Richard II. Ian McKellen did it some many years ago, and they said that in Ian McKellen's portrayal of Richard II, it was like one felt the presence of God. And a critic said that. It's pretty profound. But this is the famous soliloquy as read by Richard Burton. Oh, wrong button. Got a lot of rearranged buttons here right now. Because with the with the lightning strike last Tuesday, a week ago, the network interface on the production machine took a beating, and I'm still in the process of, and it's kind of going to be a two-person process. It just is. There's a lot of heaving and moving that has to be done of getting the fab machine online. So my ordinary, normal, multitasking sort of thing, I mean, I can't even see the chat room right now, because I have to be able to see the stream going out. So you get the idea. Richard II. Just things that will not be allowed to be portrayed in Trump America because it might scare the chicken shit president.
Let's talk of graves, of worms, and epitaphs. Make dust our paper, and with rainy eyes write sorrow on the bosom of the earth. Let's choose executors and talk of wills. And yet not so. For what can we bequeath save our deposed bodies to the ground, our lands, our lives, and all? Our Bolingbrokes. And nothing can we call our own but death and that small model of the barren earth which serves as paste and cover to our bones. For God's sake, let us sit upon the ground and tell sad stories of the death of kings, how some have been deposed, some slain in war, some haunted by the ghosts they have deposed, some poisoned by their wives, some sleeping killed, all murdered. For within the hollow crown that rounds the mortal temples of a king keeps death his court, and there the antic sits, scoffing his state, grinning at his pomp, allowing him a breath, a little scene to monarchize, be feared and kill with looks, infusing him with self and vain conceit, as if this flesh which walls about our life were brass impregnable. And humored thus comes at the last him with a little pin bore through his castle wall, and farewell, king. Cover your heads, and mock not flesh and blood with solemn reverence. Throw away respect, tradition, form, and ceremonious duty, for you have but mistook me all this while. I live with bread, like you, feel want, taste grief, need friends. Subjected thus, how can you say to me, I am a king?
Powerful stuff. Moving stuff. But in Trump-merica, I'm sure we won't be able to put that up because it might offend the God Emperor in the White House. Or it might make some goddamn Trumpansy go leaping up on the stage because they didn't like the message. Yeah. Macbeth. Yeah, I'm guessing Macbeth is out. Yeah. Out, brief candle. Out, damned spot. Screw your courage to the sticking place. References to some people not being born of woman. Reference to unnatural conduct. And of course, the great line, a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. Yeah, Macbeth's definitely out. Ah, Richard III with old Now is the Winter of Our Discontent, made glorious summer by this son of York and all the clouds that lowered upon our housetop in the deep bosom of the ocean buried. Yeah, no Richard III. We can't have anybody wandering around on Bosworth Field hollering, a hearse, a kingdom for my hearse. Nope, Richard III's out. All of the Richard VI, all the Henry VI plays. Yeah, it's a mess. Oh, but you know what can still be performed? I'm sure that we could... I'm sure that we can be certain in the fact that our arbiter of Shakespeare in the Oval Office would be approving of Othello. Ah, I bet you he'd probably support a production of Othello. You know, because in the end of Othello, the black guy kills himself or gets killed. I mean, you know, the important part is that the black guy dies.
He's very bad, very bad.
sick guy. Jesus, this country. Not to spoil it for anybody, but King Lear dies in the end of King Lear, too. It's the thing with the tragedies. Some people got to go. Jesus, the end of Hamlet? God, there's only one person left alive on the entire stage. Fortinbras, the king of Norway. Everybody else? Pie in the sky when you die. Probably wouldn't have any objection to Hamlet, though, because Hamlet bears no resemblance whatsoever to Donald Trump, because Hamlet does things like thinking and wondering about stuff and questioning the morality of and trying to solve problems relating to the murder of his daddy. And, of course, Hamlet's daddy was never arrested for being in a Klan riot in, you know, Jamaica, Queens in 1927. So Hamlet's probably okay. Merry Wives of Windsor's probably okay, too. I mean, got a bunch of wives. Trump's got a bunch of wives. Yeah, oh, wait. Love's Labor's Lost? Well, no, probably not. But you get the idea. Oh, wait, I've been awarded a cowbell. By Brother Deacon Asa. Can we get a cowbell for the sheepskin trumpansy is fleecing Central PA? I'm glad to know, I'm glad to know y'all catch the material sometimes. It's gratifying, I have to tell you. It truly is. All right, we are off and running toward meeting Don in British Columbia's challenge. Our buddy Keith has jumped in. Steve and Miss Karen and Cletus and little Twiggy have jumped in. As has Charlene. And so we have only $55 more to go to meet Don in BC's Titanic Tuesday Challenge. Thank you, Don. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you, Steve, Karen, Ms. little Cletus and Twiggy. Thank you very kindly to Keith. So $45 to go, and that challenge is met. And then we'll only have another $140 to go to get out of the hole. Wait, okay, another cow. Yeah. That one's for James. Subject line, Trump and Hamlet. Trump thinks Hamlet is a breakfast sandwich at Mickey D's. Yeah, I'd say so. It's really delicious. I like it when I'm, except I don't eat it. On Cinco de Mayo, I have a taco bowl with, you know, mayo, because it's Cinco de Mayo. What would Cinco de Mayo be without mayo? We gotta make our little jokes. Because we've got to do something to hang on to, or is a semblance of sanity. Damn sure not going to get any help from the Trumpansies. Tyler Cowen, speaking of Shakespeare, over at Bloomberg, has an interesting take on the Julius Caesar kerfuffle. He said, much as I love Shakespeare, I'm not pleased by all the attention he's getting in the American political scene. Too many of Shakespeare's plays concern the corruption of power, the problems of political succession, the unreliability of alliances, and the collapse of public order. His political decision-makers are rarely rational, and his most pleasing comedies and romances tend to be removed from matters of state. His most overtly legal tale, Merchant of Venice, stresses themes of scapegoating and preordained justice rather than judicial objectivity. Very smart little article here. Which Shakespearean characters does Trump most closely resemble? Without impeachment or worse in place, Julius Caesar doesn't seem to fit. As I pointed out last week, Julius Caesar was brilliant. Julius Caesar was brave. Julius Caesar was a genius in many respects. And Julius Caesar could have was so rich he could have bought Donald Trump for what he thinks he's worth and sold him for what he's worth and still be really, really rich. He was backed, by Marcus Licinius Crassus, the richest man possibly the world has ever known. No, just as I pointed out, King Lear opens with a scene of flattery of the ruler, but Lear had a long and successful political career before his descent into madness. No, Tyler Cowan says, I see Trump not as a ruler, but rather akin to the various fools, jesters, or in the case of Lear, the character of Edgar, who appears before the king in disguise and warns him of his enemies. Don't interpret the word fool too literally here. The most common features of these characters is that they speak between the cracks in the action and utter sentiments that no one else dares to voice. That's Trump on Twitter. Would the word kofefe be so out of place in one of those poetic rants? The thing is, such unorthodox behavior may be it works for a candidate, but it is strange, to say the least, from a head of state with nuclear weapons. So, I guess the play is over now. But just the same, it's disturbing to see a clampdown on artistic freedom. You know, it's to be expected in a fascist state. Oh, wait, never mind. Note coming in from Scott and Punky. Richard II, what with all the updating and reworking of old theatrical properties and films in recent years, shouldn't Richard II be renamed Dick the Deuce? you're not getting a cowbell for that, Scott. That's no. Meanwhile, subject line Mayhem Matinee. Steve, a member of the fraternity of Steve, says, and you know the movie's forthcoming. Get ready for the shootouts at a theater near you. Better yet, wait for the download. Yeah, I don't go to the movies a lot anymore. Not in a state where anybody with a pulse and a little bit of money in their pocket can just walk into a gun store and buy a gun and walk away with it, you know, in their pocket. No. Oh, speaking of shootings, this one sort of. How can I put this? In a civilized country, this would have been a lead story. But of course, we're not a civilized country. We're a country that is run largely by the most powerful, most politically well-connected domestic terror organization the world's ever known, namely the NRA. And so, over the weekend, Seven people got shot. Seven! No, not at a softball field in Alexandria, Virginia. No, of course not. Seven people got shot in the early morning hours of Sunday morning in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, Stan. If you want to go find it, there's video out there. You can hear something on the order of 12 gunshots. Lieutenant Joey Crosby of the Myrtle Beach Police said officers were called to the area of 5th Avenue North and Ocean Boulevard around 12:25 a.m. because of a large crowd. But before the officers could get there, a fight broke out. And then, hey, one person pulled out a gun and shot the other person with whom he or she was fighting. And then the guy with the gun shot numerous rounds and escaped the scene by carjacking a vehicle. Talk about wait for the movie, Steve in China. Then the cops found the stolen vehicle and they identified and apprehended a suspect. Seven people were taken to the hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. The unarmed security officer also was injured. One patrol car was hit by gunfire, but fortunately, no police officers were harmed in the making of this mayhem. So, I mean, that's some real live, honest-to-God, Wild West shit, right? Did it cross your feed? Did it make the front page of the online version of the New York Times or the Washington Post? Answer, no. Because, you know, forget it, Jake. It's America. It's America. I mean, hell, people get shot all the time here. It's not like we're going to do anything about it. Because, you know, people have to be willing to get shot if we want to keep on having ourselves some freedom. Because you can't have freedom unless people can just be periodically gunned down senselessly so that paranoid people can keep massive arsenals of firearms. And, well, dang, you know, I mean, freedom. Wolverines! Right? And, you know, there'll be another, and another, and another, and another, and another. And every time one of these happens, there will be a Republican who jumps in front of a camera, lickety-split, and says, "This is not the time to be politicizing our gun debate here in America. We can't talk about this right now. Right now, everybody needs thoughts and prayers." Oh, speaking of shot people, yeah, the jury has spoken, but there's Brant, coincidentally, I mean, I'm sure this has nothing to do with the fact that the jury has spoken and the trial's over, and the cop who blew away Philando Castile is just going to go on about his business, and who knows, maybe as a cop he'll kill again someday, and maybe another a jury will let him go then too. But now that the trial's over, new video has been released. The dash cam video of the shooting has finally seen the light of day. It's the dash cam video from Officer Geronimo Yanez's patrol car. And the patrol car was right behind Mr. Castile's vehicle. And the jurors got to see this video repeatedly. And as the New York Times notes, the voices that can be clearly heard on the video are calm and polite at first, and then in a matter of seconds, tension and shots fired. Actually, the way the New York Times describes it, a calm, polite discussion at first, and then in seconds, a sudden burst of tension and shots. You know, that's kind of disingenuous from a journalistic standpoint. It might make for some nice drama, but from a journalistic standpoint, it is. It's disingenuous. A sudden burst of tension and shots. Well, there was only one person firing shots, and hint, it was not Philando Castile. They go through the insurance and registration and everything. And then Philando Castile says, again, politely, "Sir, I have to tell you, I do have a firearm on me." At which point, Officer Geronimo Yanez immediately puts his hand on his gun. And says, "Okay, don't reach for it then." And before he can do anything, Yanez screams, "Don't pull it out!" Castile says, "I'm not pulling it out." And Philando Castile's significant other, Diamond Reynolds, she says, "He's not pulling it out." And Yanez keeps screaming, "Don't pull it out." And then before anything else can happen, he pumps 7 bullets through Philando Castile. And we find out in this video that the last words of Philando Castile, uttered gently, quietly, he simply says, "I wasn't reaching." As the blood and the life runs out of him. Imagine that. Jurors actually saw that and let Officer Yanez walk. Because after the fact, and with no corroboration whatsoever, and in fact direct contradiction, Yanez says, "He was reaching for his gun, he was reaching for his gun." If you want to see the video, I'm sure other outlets have it too, but it's at the New York Times. It's in the story. Further proof that no, our problems will not be solved by more cameras. Our police problem in the United States will only be solved by better police training and behavior. You know what the cameras do for us? The cameras let us watch. Now, I mean, for years and years and years, we've seen on television fake violence and fake killing and fake shooting. Oh, but in the tail end of the second decade of the 21st century, boys and girls, now we get to watch it for real. By God, you get a sense for the primal thrill the crowd must have had in the Circus Maximus or the Flavian Amphitheater in ancient Rome when the lions came out or the tigers or when two human beings tried with all their might to kill each other. Yeah. So, I don't know if I were you, I'd wait a little bit to. I'd wait a little bit to go and see that. Might want to make sure that your head's in a place where you can cope with it, because otherwise it's liable to make you start screaming. Because 12 people, tried and true, watched that, and said, "Ah, you know, I mean, we couldn't see his hands." Maybe, I mean, he's a cop. He'd never lie, right? He's on trial to stay out of prison for some several years. He'd never lie about what he thought. No, he'd never say, "Hey, I got a little trigger happy. I'm sorry." Wowzer. Oh, and close the filibobster. News broke just before the program, just before airtime, that there had been a small explosion at the central train station in Brussels. That touched me, because I remember the central train station in Brussels. Apparently one person has been shot. Angry Indian tells me it's over now. Good. Fair enough, Carol Baker. Carol says, better police training? No. You're wrong. No amount of training will resolve the real reason why so many black people get to die on camera. Only when police are held to the same legal standard as the rest of us will it stop. When enough cops get found guilty of murder and go to fucking prison will it stop. No consequences, no change in behavior. And I agree. Maybe I am wrong. But a trigger-happy... Yanez went for his gun in a hurry. He put his hand on his holster the minute that Mr. Castile said, "I have a firearm." And it was a matter of seconds before he was shooting. Yeah, it is. And I'm sure that the Blue Lives Matters types will say, because I'm setting up a straw man here, "Well, he's going to have to live with this for the rest of his life." Precisely. He gets to live with it. Philando Castile, on the other hand, got to die. So there's that. All right, we are at the top of the hour. It is Tuesday, again, the 20th day of June, West Virginia Day. And, your calls are welcome. Your conversation is welcome. You know the numbers, I trust. 304-663-4676 is the stress line. It's been working very, very well lately. with one notable exception last night. 304-663-HORN. Or from anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn. If you've never sent me a contact request and you'd like to get in on the conversation, I welcome your participation. And, of course, the other number as well, 304-574-8178. 304-574-8178. And they all will get you right into the program. And I'm dealing with a new setup here, and it's really annoying. I don't know why these things happen the way they do, but yeah, they do. So let's try a different method. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. And I'm trying to play some damn music.
Day, June 20, 2017.
Heat is on this week, and we are expected to see at least 115 degrees or higher.
Record heat wave scorches western U.S.
The health crisis in Flint has created a trust crisis in Michigan government.
New criminal indictments in the Flint water crisis.
Portuguese officials are calling this the greatest wildfire tragedy in recent history.
Massive wildfires in Portugal killed 62. May 2017 was the second or third hottest May ever recorded. Plus, a court victory and an environmental award for the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe.
All of those victories and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Mining coal isn't very good for you. Neither is burning it. It's the reason why there's 1.5 billion people in China, but you can only see 4 of them.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, summer has barely begun, and it's already a scorcher out west.
Yeah, it's not just any heat wave. It is a record heat wave scorching the western U.S. The National Weather Service issued an excessive heat warning for cities across the western U.S. this week as the worst heat wave in decades breaks all-time or near all-time heat records from Sacramento to Tucson, Arizona. At Phoenix Sky Harbor Airport, some flights have already been canceled because excessive heat makes planes lose lift. It's serious enough that officials in Arizona have warned residents, quote, don't go outside in the middle of the day unless you really must.
They are pushing temperatures of nearly 120 degrees in the desert in Phoenix right now.
Yeah, it's bad. Killer heat waves could become the new normal with global warming. That's according to a new study from the University of Hawaii. Analyzing data on deadly heat waves going back to the 1980s, the researchers project an alarming increase in the number of deadly heat days on every single continent with global warming. At current rates of fossil fuel emissions, AP reports that by the end of the century, the southern United States could expect to see sustained lethal temperatures all summer long, and some tropical regions could face deadly heat conditions nearly all year round. But the researchers say by then, hopefully, people will learn to adapt. The impacts extend beyond heat to wildfires. In Portugal over the weekend, massive, fast-moving wildfires fueled by record heat killed at least 62 people, many of them trapped in their cars by fast-moving flames as they tried to evacuate. Meanwhile, May 2017 was the second hottest May on record globally since record keeping began in the 1880s. That's according to data from NASA. But it was the third hottest May on record according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, which uses a slightly different temperature data set. But no matter how you measure it, global warming is continuing. In the Flint water crisis, Michigan Attorney General Bill Schuette has charged 2 high-ranking state health officials on new felony charges, including misconduct in office and involuntary manslaughter. The new charges stem from an outbreak of Legionnaires' disease that killed 12 people and sickened 70, which occurred at the same time as widespread lead contamination, resulting from a state-appointed emergency manager switching the city's water source. But officials never informed residents about either issue. Attorney General Schuette said he hopes the ongoing investigation will help restore accountability and trust in government.
Schuette seems to be rounding up a lot of people in this investigation and bringing criminal charges. And I should note here, he's a Republican, but he hasn't yet worked his way up to the governor of Michigan, has he?
No, he hasn't.
Hopefully he's headed in that direction.
Good news for the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe in North Dakota in its fight against the controversial Dakota Access Pipeline. A U.S. District Court judge on Friday ordered the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to reconsider its environmental review of the pipeline, ruling that the Corps failed to consider environmental justice or the impacts of an oil spill on the tribe's fishing and hunting rights when it suddenly reversed course earlier this year and approved the pipeline after an executive order from President Donald Trump.
Now, the court could have stopped it before that oil started flowing, right?
Yes, he could have.
And yet, the court waited until
after the oil was flowing to say they didn't do the environmental review correctly.
That's right.
Well, let's hope that pipeline doesn't start leaking before the court makes its next ruling.
More good news. The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe has also received the first ever Henry Wallace Award, a $250,000 grant from the Wallace Global Fund for their courage and persistence in standing up for environmental justice in their pipeline fight. The Wallace Global Fund also pledged an additional investment of up to $1 million to help the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and other tribes transition to 100% renewable energy.
Good for them. They deserve it. We all owe the Standing Rock Sioux a debt of gratitude. For much more on those stories and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
And it is 14 minutes past the hour on this Titanic Tuesday, the 20th of June, 2017. Let's see, just a quick reminder. During the break, I talked to Don in British Columbia, not on air, but off. And, he said he was excited to see that $55 of his challenge had been met, and he hopes the next 45 get met in short order, too. So please don't leave that challenge laying on the table. Please. Let's see, a couple of notes coming in. Barkway from the chat room. Tells me, I was stopped by police. I have a concealed carry license, which the cop saw when I went for my license in my wallet. He immediately put a hand on his holster and asked if I had a weapon on me, to which I said, no, sir, with both hands on the steering wheel. And the cop didn't shoot me. But I'm female, and I'm also not a person of color. That last part probably makes a significant difference. Because there's no getting around the fact that you're more likely, you know how it goes. Note coming in from Ron in Raleigh. Subject line, Second Amendment. People don't realize there is a subclause to the Second Amendment that says after all the palaver about a well-regulated militia, the right to keep and bear arms shall not be abridged, paren, except when you're black, close paren. I try to tell the young brothers not to fool themselves thinking they have the right to carry. Hell, the police will shoot your black ass if you're unarmed and running away. Justice Alito said so. And he did. Back when he was on the Circuit Court of Appeals, he said, yeah, you can definitely shoot the black kid running away who poses no threat to you whatsoever. He can be 30 feet away, and you can shoot him right in the back of the head, and it's okay, fine and dandy. It's a fact. Bob in Texas says, subject line, police not guilty. I remember many years ago when the mafia bosses were put on trial, they routinely got away with no conviction. It was said that at least some jurors were afraid that a guilty vote would make them a mob target. Do you think, Bob asks, there are jurors that fear similar repercussions from convicting a police officer? It would be a very cynical thing for me to say yes, Bob. But, yeah, I do. Because it's all public record. And so, you know, I mean, or, you know, I mean, you just start getting a lot of tickets. I mean, it can happen anywhere, anytime, to anyone. But those things are a matter of public record. And since jury verdicts of guilt have to be unanimous, that means that all the jurors, you can't get it wrong in that instance. I don't think we can rule anything out. I mean, it's crazy stuff. just nuts. And look, the concealed carry and the and all the gun insanity, let's be clear. I'm not assigning any blame, but it makes matters worse. The story that Barkway gave us. You got a gun on you? No. But there was a time when the police didn't have to worry about everybody being gunned up. Now they do. And really, we don't have any strategies for dealing with that. And frankly, as Carol noted, there's no real strategy for being black. Because it just raises the odds. It's just you, and I don't know, I don't know how to address it, because, you know, me, I'm shiny with white male privilege. And so consequently, I can't know. I can only sympathize. I can only empathize with the terror that that must bring. Let's run over and check in with Charlie. Hey, Charlie.
Yeah, how's it going, Bob?
Oh, pretty good. How about you?
Okay. I was listening to your show today. I think it's time that, really, I mean, I wouldn't have any problem with it if I was on a jury, you know, just having a little bit of jury nullification in a case like this. And, you know, if a redneck jury foreman came up and started giving me a hard time, I'd say, fella, I've got 6 weeks to live here if you want to. You change your vote to how I'm voting, and we'll get out of here. I'm not going to change my vote the way you're voting. Sorry.
And you get a hung jury out of it, and maybe a retrial.
Yep. They'll have to retry it again. And, you know, if they start this stuff about the judge's instructions, I'll say, well, you know, the Constitution says you'll be tried by a jury of your peers, and the 14th Amendment no longer says that that's a state's rights issue anymore, since it's in the federal Constitution. So I don't read anything out of our Constitution about the judge's instructions.
The thing about jury instructions is that they're instructions to the jury. And
yeah.
And it's still subject to interpretation by the jury. And the bottom line is that that's just a matter of that's how the law is to be applied. But the fact is, jurors are there to determine what the facts are.
Yeah, and if the facts nullify what the law says, then a juror has a lot of power. If the people would get a little bit of balls about them and realize that whenever a trial goes down, they don't have to listen to that judge.
But
the
look,
judge can give him all the instructions he wants.
Yeah, but if you say that out loud, the judge will ditch the jury and declare a mistrial.
I'm sorry. Then they'll have to have another trial. I do not respect conservative judges.
But another part of the problem here, Charlie, is the fact that nobody, I mean, I made a joke about it a couple of weeks ago. I think I was talking with Sparky about, you know, how to get out of jury duty. Because jury duty is a pain in the ass. It is a real sacrifice on the part of anybody who has to participate in one, especially if it goes more than a couple of days. And so most people, the minute they get their jury summons, say, oh, hell no. No way am I got to figure out a way out of this. And so what you wind up with on juries, Charlie, are the people who were not smart enough to get out of jury duty. I mean, No, go ahead.
I'm not too sure I'd want to get out of jury duty. I mean, you know, these quote conservative idiots we got in this country right now, somebody needs to tone them down a little bit and have enough balls about them to say, no, you're not getting away with this. Sorry.
Yeah.
I mean, if I were to meet the President of the United States, I'd probably tell him he's a dumb bastard. You know, I mean, I'm sorry. It's just the way I feel, and I'd tell him that to his face. I mean, turn around, walk off. I mean,
Do you remember it was years and years ago, it was like maybe 2001, when somebody did that in a rope line with Dim Leader?
Yeah.
He was moving down the rope line, somebody shook his hand and said, "You are a terrible president." And because he was Bush, he said, who gives a damn what you think? And kept moving.
Well, I mean, you know, that's if people are dumb enough to if the president won't listen to anybody and he doesn't care what anybody thinks about him and the people want to keep voting for him, I mean, you know, that tells me we've got a lot of stupid people in this country. And they're labeled conservative. I'm not sure what conservative means. I think conservative means you're too stupid to think for yourself, so you have to let somebody else think for you.
Well, it starts in many ways with William F. Buckley and his National Review. And the National Review is now and always has been a nasty little haven for white supremacy, Klan sympathy, you know, filth.
But he did it while talking with his teeth clenched with an upeast accent.
And so he created this cult of conservatism, which was basically just a way of despising things like Social Security and the idea of a social safety net. I mean, when Buckley was inventing modern so-called movement conservatism, hell, we didn't even have Medicare yet, or Medicaid.
Yep.
They were pissed. You know, they were hardcore anti-commies, and everybody who didn't agree with them was a commie. They were John Birchers who knew which fork to use with the caviar. Mm-hmm. Or not to use the fork and instead to use the teeny tiny little spoon.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that really impressed me. It's whenever Angry Indian was on your program one time, and he said there's a lot of people out there that believe that black people don't feel pain, that they just don't have the feelings that everybody else does. And, you know, I think Angry Indian was correct about that, and that is a crying shame, and we can't treat every human the same.
Well, it is, but it's also baked into the DNA of this country, you know?
It's just, you know, when we treat somebody different because their skin's a different color, then, you know, you've lost the capability to be a loving human. You're just, I don't know what it is. It's shameful. I think it's shameful. I really do.
And there, because it is. But it is part of the. I mean, it's in the country's DNA. And when it's so to speak, and when it's that down deep, it's hard to get at. And there are, of course, because this is a capitalist country, always people who can make money out of it. One of the reasons that the Klan went away for a little while is that they got sued into submission, because at one point in time, the Klan was very wealthy. There was good money in the Klan. And like I said, National Review has been racist from jump. And it provided a nice living for William F. Buckley, who was just a nasty old racist. So, you know, as long as there's an economic incentive in something, there's going to be someone who wants to make money out of it. I mean, look at the anti-abortion industry. God damn, that thing's probably worth billions of dollars.
Yep.
And so capitalism says that there's got to be somebody there. Nature abhors a vacuum, and capitalism abhors money that's just laying around, not being hoovered up by somebody.
But I just, you know, I can't understand, and I'm sorry, but I can't understand how Officer Yanez, or whatever his name is, I wouldn't be able to live with myself if I had done something like that, because I don't think the guy was, I don't think he would have gotten shot. I don't think that the man had any intent of shooting him. I mean.
No, hell no. No, and the thing is, the New York Times article kind of breezed past the fact that he'd already been profiled in the first place. The whole reason for the stop was because Yanez radioed in that he thought he resembled a suspect in another case. Well, the reason he thought he resembled a suspect in another case was because the guy in the other case was black, and, well, you know, Castile was black and therefore possible suspect.
I don't know. It's just a shame. I think it's a shameful time in this country. And, you know, there's a lot of people rallying around this officer Yanez. But if I remember correctly, didn't he hurl a bunch of obscenities around after?
Oh, yeah. After he pumped seven rounds into Philando Castile, he ran away back from the car and started hollering fuck for all he was worth. Like, you know.
Now, that tells me a lot about somebody right there. I mean, that tells me a lot about the type of person somebody is. And I tell you what, I don't respect this Yanez fella. I mean, I'd have problems calling him a human. I mean, I'm sorry. You just don't blow somebody away and then start yelling obscenities. That's not a good thing.
Well, to me, and I don't know how this case was argued, but to me, that's an admission of guilt. He knew he shouldn't have shot him the minute he shot him.
And he was trying to build a record, and the man's common-law wife or girlfriend, whatever she was, I can't remember now, was saying, no, sir, it didn't happen like that. And he was trying to build a record.
But, as I noted, he'll get to live with the consequences of his acts. Philando Castile.
Well, if I'm ever around him, I'll just turn around and walk off, because I don't want to be around people like that. I'm sorry. I just don't want to be anywhere near them. They're just, you know, they're subhuman. I'm sorry. But you just don't fire seven rounds into somebody and start cussing. No. And you know that you're wrong when you did it, and you're worried about losing your job, and you just blew somebody away. That tells me right there you don't have any respect for human life.
And that you have no business being a cop. See, Yanez was scared from the minute he made the stop, because he'd already worked himself up into a lather thinking that he had some sort of desperate criminal on his hands. And somehow or another, a baby in the car and a wife in the car weren't able to pull him back from the brink. And he had an opportunity. He could have said, okay, I'll be back in a minute, and gone and walked back to his car, sat down in his car, whatever. And nothing would have happened to him. If Philando Castile had taken that firearm and jumped out of the car and started shooting, Yanez still had body armor on. He was still at a distance. He wasn't point blank. And the jury just got railroaded. They got run over. They got hoodooed. They got bullshitted by apparently a relatively talented defense lawyer who was able to muddy up the waters enough to keep 12 people from agreeing that his client did what his client did.
And from what I understand, I think Officer Yanez had his gun trained on Mr. Castile, right?
Well, from the...
Before he shot him?
I haven't seen the... I don't know. But, I mean, it seems kind of unusual that he would just yank it out of the holster. Those things have snaps on them. Just pop the snaps, yank it out, and pump seven rounds through him.
And a man, and Mr. Castile had never even taken the gun out of his pocket.
Well, see, wrong, now wait, I mean... At trial, he said, oh, no, he was going for the gun. He was definitely going for the gun.
But still, if you've got a gun that's unholstered and somebody else is going for a gun, you've still got 1 or 2 seconds that, you know, or maybe longer than that, because you have to pull that gun out of your pocket, and I'm sure it's not going to be as easy to pull a gun out of a pocket as it is a holster. And I don't even think, you know, and two, you got to remember, the man probably never intended on shooting him. He probably had no intentions of shooting Officer Yanez. And why the jury...
Well, why would you do that with a baby in the car? Why would you do that with a baby in the car?
Yep. I mean, these jurors up in Minnesota, you know, they must be genetically related to Michelle Bachmann or something. I mean,
well, look, I don't want to start casting aspersions on Minnesota because it happens all over the country. One, but two, people are inclined to side with the police.
I'm not.
You're not. But they're
crooked as a dog's hind leg. They stick together like crazy. Now, if they didn't have a police union, I might give them a little bit of slack. But that is the purpose of that police union, is to get people off that are guilty. That's the only purpose of this police union.
Not going to get a lot of argument out of me about that. But people on juries will side with police. Because, look, they show up, they're wearing their uniform, they're all sparkly, they got badges and guns, and they exude the power and authority of the state. And all of that, all that dressing is done to enhance his credibility. If he just showed up and testified in a suit and tie or whatever... I don't know. Maybe he did. But still, the court is the law. The prosecutor is the law. The cop is the law. The judge is the law. Everything. And so it was the law dealing with one of its own. Yep. And so naturally, it's going to come to these kinds of conclusions.
And that's a shame. Well, I'll get off here and let somebody else talk.
All right. You take care, Charlie. Good hearing from you.
Okie doke. Thank you.
Bye now. Calling from Tennessee. That's our buddy Charlie. And Brother Deacon Asa points out, was it Steve in New York City who was talking about how he loves a Southern liberal? I think Charlie from Tennessee exemplifies the Southern liberal rather nicely. He tells them like it is. And I agree. So at about 24 minutes past the hour, we're a little over halfway through this Titanic Tuesday edition of The Horn. Again, we still got $45 to go to meet Don in British Columbia's challenge. And beyond that, we've got another $140 to go to get out of the hole. So a total of $145 to go. But, you know, it could happen. It could. Barclay asked in the chat room, I wonder if Philando Castile would have been shot if he'd gotten out of the car the minute he was pulled over. Oh, yeah. Without a doubt. Don't get out of the car. Or at least that's what the conventional wisdom says. So much going on. It really is. It gets kind of difficult to keep track. Seeing what comes next here. Oh, last night, Steve from Georgia Stan called in, and we had a brief conversation about the election going on down there. I guess the polls will be closing if they haven't already. And it will be, I don't know when we'll have results. But we do know, courtesy of Brad Friedman, that the proprietary code of the video game voting machines was found on at least one unsecured server. Ha! Gosh, I wonder how that would happen. But as I checked in on the news this morning, I couldn't help noticing that all the talk about, well, you know, if the Democrats lose this one, they're going to be deeply demoralized. Really? By losing a seat they were never supposed to have a chance of winning in the first place, that's going to be deeply demoralizing? And do please remember that John Ossoff is a long, long way from being nearly ideologically pure enough for the devotions of the ideological purity brigade, which, of course, determines who is and is not fitting to be a member of the government. Because the ideological purity brigade demands absolute 110% perfection of every candidate. And, you know, John Ossoff just pulls up really, really short. I mean, never mind the geography, never mind that what passes for a viable Democratic candidate in the South is not anything like what passes for a viable Democratic candidate in, say, Massachusetts New York or California or Oregon or Washington. No. There is a single standard out there. It applies to everybody. And naturally, a Southern Democrat can't possibly get close enough to that almost unreachable standard of ideological purity, which we must have. We can, you know what, the Democratic Party, well, goddamn establishment, DNC Democratic shills. We can just live in the wilderness and it'll be okay. I mean, Trump's not really going to do any damage. I mean, he's just a placeholder. I mean, it's just not real. And we can just wait until we have until all the Democrats get to be as ideologically pure as the sparkle part powered unicorn cavalry purity brigade demands that they be, and then we can go in and we can make sparkle fart powered purity pony brigade cavalry unicorn government. Sure, you betcha. But there was a lot of talk about the money being raised. And, you know, Democrats can't possibly pour that kind of money into every congressional race. No. I mean, you don't have to. Nobody's going to beat Steve Cantaloupe's King up there in the 4th District in Iowa. The one woman who was willing to run against him ran off, got run out of the race because, well, you know, people threatened to kill her. But it's the liberals, it's those wild-eyed, radical, left-wing Democrats who are the problem here. Funny, I haven't heard of any, Trumpansy legislators saying they were too afraid to run for re-election because so many of those demon-crats were out there threatening their lives. I even heard no kidding, this morning. I even heard someone refer to what happened in Alexandria as a near massacre. You know what another phrase for a near massacre is? Not a massacre! Oh, and the special snowflakes are having multiple hissies. Yes, of course. Over what, you might ask? Well, how about, so they had a hissy over Julius Caesar because they're special snowflakes, and they somehow thought that the message of Julius Caesar was to, that assassination is a good thing. You know, atne ute aitbre, the umpansy trays, if you know what I mean. But now they're all head up. About a new music video. No, really, they're having a shit hemorrhage over a music video. In this particular instance, a music video by Moby. You know, electronic music kind of guy. He's actually a descendant of Herman Melville, hence the performance name Moby. And he's got a new music video out, and with animation. And oh, the little trumpansy snowflakes are just coming unglued. It's for a song called "In This Cold Place," and it's by Moby and the Void Pacific Choir. And it's animated. The music video is animated. It's a cartoon. So apparently, a guy named Thomas Lifson, over at a right-wing website, which can, this has got to be a parody or satire or comedy. It's called American Thinker. He says, the artistic quality and budget of this video overshadow anything Hamas could produce, but as I see it, Moby and Cuts, the guys who did the animation, are breeding fanatics just as the Palestinians do. You know what breeds fanatics in Palestine? Dropping precision-guided munitions on infants in their crib. I don't think it's cartoons breeding fanatics in the occupied territories. I think it's, like, slaughter instead. Call me crazy. And I guess there's a phrase out there I've missed out on somewhere along the way. Virtue signaling. Anybody want to help? Michael and Madison, are you out there this evening? You're good at this kind of stuff. Virtue signaling. Because one of the room temperature IQs over at InfoWars, Alex Jones's website, a guy named Paul Joseph Watson, he said it's laugh out loud funny. The video's like virtue signaling and hysteria had a baby. You know, what it is it's political commentary via art. Hey, here's a little memo for the Trumpanzees. Art has been making political commentary for about as long as there has been art. I mean, the guy who, or woman, we don't know, who went deep into a cave in Spain, Altamira, and started painting beautiful portraits of bison on the ceiling and the walls and stuff. That may have been a political statement. Something having to do with the way that the clan or the tribe was organized. Art challenges. Art inquires. And sometimes art offends. Oh, dear God. You know what we need right now? If you think about the right-wing hysteria from generations past, what we need right now is a quart mason jar. Oh, wait, no, this would make it performance art. Was it Robert Mapplethorpe who did Piss Christ? A jar with a crucifix with Christ on it submerged in a jar of urine? And the right wing went, ooh, brooga, 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 hissy, hissy, hissy. Had purple polka-dotted kittens with crocheted tails, they did. How dare they, our Lord and Savior! Yeah. Stephen New York says, subject line, art. Oh, Bob, to the Trumpanzees, art is nothing more than literal or verbal shit you spew or throw at people. Well, I mean, there's some art there in your Trump Tower, and it's really classy art, because it looks like it's gold. Got an answer from Michael and Madison. Virtue signaling? I got nothing, Bob. Well, I thought if anybody would, Michael, it'd be you. It's got that cachet of, you know, the sort of ancient astronaut pseudoscience. Monkey jellyfish hybrids that glow in the dark stuff that they do to such commercial success over at the Jones joint. But no, what I was going to say is a quart mason jar, little Trump doll, and fill it with apple juice. And then have somebody open it and drink the apple juice because people would think it was pee-pee. God damn, do you see how degenerate the liberals are? Oh my God, we've got to... But that would just be trolling, wouldn't it? Yeah, I think so. Okay, let's check in with the angry Indian. I think he's been conjured by Charlie in Tennessee. Hey, angry. Wait, wrong button. Sorry.
Hey.
There he is.
Hello.
Howdy.
Hey. Yeah, no, I was going to call in anyway. And, yeah, it was, you know, I appreciate what Charlie had to say because it's nice to hear, and I'm being frank now, that white people out there give a damn. But it's, you know, we've talked about this before. It's got to be everybody. It's got to be the majority. You know, I mean, mathematically speaking, common sense speaking, same thing, whether it's Mussolini's fascist Italy, Hitler, because everybody likes to bring him up because it's the only fascist we seem to be able to remember. But, you know, any fucked up society, you're going to find, you know, people who really are not down with the program. But what is the risk of standing up to things? We just saw what the fuck happened here in Portland. You know, three white men, I might add, on a multicultural fucking train, decided that they were going to defend two black women who were being harassed by a fucking neo-Nazi. And, you know, two of these men paid, they all paid the price, but two of them, you know, they lost their lives. And we're not even talking about that. And what I'm trying to get to is, you know, three white people are stabbed by white supremacists under Trump. Right? Not to say that racism didn't exist before Trump, but he's given a very recent license to this. One of these men was a goddamn veteran, United States Army, right? The other one is a practicing Buddhist whose last words were, tell everybody on the train that I love them. That's the last thing that that man said before he left this planet. And I mean, you know, there's no discussion amongst the white liberals around me, because this is Portlandia, right? This is liberal town, the whitest, largest city in America. But the point is, none of them have discussed, other than the fact that this thing happened. I don't hear any of the MAGAs, the Make America Great, you know, people who are so pro-military. They, you know, they love Trump because he loves the military. Well, we just had a veteran here murdered by a neo-Nazi. Nothing. Silent. You had Richard, and forgive me for not remembering his brother's name, but a young black man, second lieutenant. He had just become commissioned in the United States Army. He was murdered by white supremacists. Do you hear any of the pro-military motherfuckers talking about this? Where am I going with this? With Philando Castile? Open carry, concealed carry. Everybody's got to have a fucking gun, according to the NRA, Ted Nugent, and all these other punk white guys. So here the fuck you go. You get a black man shot to death for carrying a legal goddamn fucking weapon that he did not fucking get a chance, even if he was thinking about it, to fucking do anything. And as you just said, you know, we got a goddamn new dash cam video that they didn't show the public before the motherfucking trial, showing that he was complying as
no, because as and you know why, right? Because they were afraid that the greater Minneapolis area would have been burnt to a cinder.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's pretty damning.
Yeah. Well, there's that, Brother Bob, and the fact that how the fuck could they let this motherfucker go? You also, you know, have to consider the fact that this is not a white police officer in this case. This is a Latino police officer. I don't particularly know where his origins are, because, of course, in, you know, Latin America, that is an issue. Within the Latin American community, that is an issue. But the bottom line is, he's Latino. He is now on record as having murdered this black man for absolutely no motherfucking reason other than his own fucking cowardice, and then threatens the wife and a 4-year-old fucking child. I'm telling you, on the streets, this shit is already causing fucking problems and dissension because people are not talking to each other. You know, the black community is mad, and they're angry with fucking Spanish-speaking people now because of this shit. And a lot of the fucking black people who...
Right, because you know. you've got a Hispanic shooter, you've got a black victim, and so we've got a competition along the line of continuum toward whiteness.
Mm-hmm. Because, and I'm going to point this out too, so there's a context in what I'm saying. The FBI broke up a plot, a conspiracy, more than like 10 years ago in California, and it wasn't just localized in L.A. where I believe it began. It actually probably began in the prison system. But, you know, the bottom line was the FBI found out that there were Latino gangs who had hooked up with white supremacist gangs, which is something that happens in the prison system. See, this shit isn't discussed. You know, black men have to face Latino gangs who make political alliances and shit with white supremacists. This shit is not discussed, right? And then, you know, it gets to the street. People think what's in there is confined. That's not true. So there was a plot that they were going to get rid of all of the black people through, you know, violence and threats and shit, you know, out of California, and that the white supremacists could take Northern California, and the Northern Mexicanos could take Southern California and rebuild. Now, this sounds like a lot of bullshit, but there are people just like they're white supremacists, they're American supremacists, and they're willing to work with white supremacists to kill black folks. So, you know, those of us who are political understand this. And those folks who are on the street who know people who sell dope and what have you understand that there's a financial drug alliance between white supremacists and Mexican interests, right? and they both gang up on black people. And that, you know, this is being added to what the fuck just happened. But we're not able to have a discussion about it because white liberals don't really want to talk about what the fuck is going on, even in terms of what the fuck happened here with Steve Scalise. With, you know, instead of talking about guns, we're allowing the far right to lay this on the feet of liberals. And trust me, the liberals are not doing any goddamn thing to really change anything other than protect their own fucking class. And we're not able to have that discussion either. I mean, we just saw this shit. Even though Sanders was not the perfect goddamn candidate, he was better than fucking Stein, and he was an alternative to the DNC to not let that fucking happen. Well, it's the same thing with this discussion. You know, Orlando Castillo got, you know, the murderer of Orlando Castillo was allowed to get away because he represents the system. We just saw what the fuck happened with Betty Shelby. There's a meet and greet for her this week. She killed somebody. She had a record of domestic violence and heavy drug use. And she had beat up a boyfriend beforehand. How she became a police officer and nobody seems to be able to. But there's a meet and greet. And now we know that you got all kinds of solidarity from every police officer in the fucking state the night after he murdered Orlando Castillo. So really, you know, people who are asking white folk, I mean, you know, black people, what we should do and blah, 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 blah. Man, you know, white people need to have discussion amongst themselves. The Latinos need to have a goddamn discussion amongst themselves in terms of what the fuck is American and what that means and what the price of that means. You know, I'm part Filipino. That's a goddamn heavy discussion in the Asian community because you have a lot of people who are like, you know, I don't like black people, this, that, and the other. And it's like, but wait a minute. You know, grandfather was in the Japanese internment camp in Washington State. How can you think like this? Well, they're niggas and we're almost white. We need to start really being honest about what is going on and stop pushing this crap about the American people. If we were one fucking people, we wouldn't be having these discussions and this shit wouldn't be happening. We would simply be talking about class. We would not be talking about fucking race wars or potential goddamn race wars with a president who really isn't going out of his way to start this shit so much as he'll take political fucking, you know, capital from it when it's useful to him. So anyway.
Well, no, I tend to agree. But you know, there are structural questions as well as, well, what to call it? There's the philosophical, metaphysical, moral question that attends all issues surrounding the idea of race in this country. Then there is the separate structural question of, is it possible to make this stop? Or, to go back to what Carol said, you know, when people start, when cops start getting convicted, then maybe cops will stop shooting quite so easily.
Maybe.
And that's a structural issue.
Maybe.
I'm of the opinion that there should be, because see, when you find out something doesn't work, I mean, you know, let's say the car breaks down. Do you sit there in the broken down car and insist that the car run and the car doesn't run, so you just say, okay, well, we're going to leave it this way? Or do you fix the car so that it will run? I think most people would say you fix the fucking car. Mm-hmm. Well, in this case, the judicial system as it is presently constituted does not work. It's almost statistically impossible that all these cops who walk after killing all these black people were all not guilty.
Yeah, but what makes you think that the system's not working?
No, wait, Angry, I get that argument. That the system's working because the system's designed to work that way and that's how it's supposed to go. But that's really not how it's supposed to go if you take the system and its values on its face. And so the only way I can think of to stop it is to stop letting local prosecutors prosecute local cops.
And can you really see that happening?
I can envision a structure where it can. This isn't rocket science. This isn't about building a rocket to Cygnus.
Actually it is because, okay, you got the letter of the law, right? Well, we already got the letter of the law, which makes all of this shit illegal and really means that Yanez should have been prosecuted for fucking, reckless goddamn endangerment at the least, because he was afraid and he just fucking let off because he was goddamn scared of black people and he was scared of black men.
How does he wind up getting charged like that? Why isn't there a reckless endangerment charge? Why isn't there a charge related to the discharge of 7 rounds within a foot or two's proximity of a child?
Because they'd have to find him guilty on those.
No, because the person who drafted the indictments didn't draft an indictment for that. It's much simpler, really.
No, I understand what you're saying. But the point is, if you go by the letter of the fucking law, right? Betty Shelby, this cat, any of them that you care to name, because there's been so fucking many. There's no point. Look at Baltimore. You get your neck broken for looking at a fucking cop the wrong way. They all pound on you. They break your fucking back. They break your neck and shit. It's your fault. The letter of the law says that was fucking illegal. If you and I, as two supposed fucking progressives, right? I don't consider myself a little liberal, but two fucking progressives.
Yeah, words.
If we simply argue with one of these, well, you know what I mean. If we simply disagree with one of these sons of bitches, and let's say I wave my hands to say, man, you're fucking insane. Oh, I was scared. And he shoots the both of us, kills us the fuck dead right on the goddamn street. He'll walk. The letter of the law says we were just motherfucking murdered. But once it gets into court and language and the wordplay starts happening, and do we really think that the angry Indian is an angry motherfucker, man? I mean, look at what he writes, look at what he says and shit. Kincaid, he's got his goddamn questions. So basically, any reasonable fucking person would be afraid of somebody like this. So he was totally within his motherfucking rights to murder them both, but it's not really murder because he was defending himself. Now, in the case of Philando Castile, in the case of the black police chief in Oklahoma, I think Tulsa, actually, the former police chief, I don't know who the hell is running things now, but he was shot by a white supremacist nutcase. There was a bomb threat. The police responded. He shot. He didn't kill him, but he shot the damn police chief 4 times. They questioned him for 3 hours and sent him the fuck home. Can you imagine a black man under the same goddamn condition saying, I didn't know there were cops coming in my house. I was just doing domestic defense and fucking go home that evening? You got a black man in Texas who's on trial right the fuck now. He defended himself because the cops came into the wrong house. They were supposed to go into the home next to him. They came into the wrong fucking home, ran in, and started shooting at him. So he took the home weapon and defended himself. He's on trial for his fucking life. A white man in the same goddamn state did the same thing several months before that, and they sent him home the same evening. But we got the letter of the law. So it's not rocket science to understand how this is happening, but it's rocket science to actually get people to say to themselves, we need to change the system without people thinking that I'm going to lose something if there's justice to people of color, to immigrants, refugees, what have you, women. I mean, nobody's talking about women around here. Women are disappearing all the fucking time. Black, white, Native American. I don't know how many goddamn Native American women are missing, and nobody's even asking. And then, Mexican immigrants and women from Nicaragua and what have you who are trying to get up here, they go missing, the border. The patrol doesn't even give a damn. They won't even entertain questions about that. They're like, that's not their concern. That's not what they're worried about. They're worried about the security of the United States. Okay, understood. But you got people who are dying on these borders. They're being murdered by people. There was a female serial killer that was killing people in men in Texas. No, sorry, not Texas, but in the border towns on the other side in Mexico, because she got tired of the murders of women. So, instead of investigating the murders of the women, they investigated her, right? And I'm not saying that she should have went around and killed these cats, but you get what I'm saying. You know, there's a whole lot of contradictions here. And until we start really talking about that, all of this is just talk.
Well, of course it is.
You know, why?
Because sooner
you know,
or later, somebody has to introduce some legislation.
Yeah, but we've got legislation, and none of it, that's my point, is that we got, you know, the black letter of the law. We got legislation, but if the system doesn't go, if the system isn't going to push it, they're going to do what the hell they want to do. You know, Jeff Sessions, the Keebler elf from Alabama, he's up there, well, we're going to go after all the marijuana people. Well, it's legal in these states, and it's been legal for more than a decade in California. Well, we're going to do it anyway because that's just what I decide to do. It's against all of the rules, but he's going to do it.
Who, by the way, is the latest member of the Trump administration to lawyer up?
Oh, yeah, really. I haven't seen that yet, I'm not surprised. Watching Chris Wallace.
He retained a pettifogger by the name of Charles Cooper. He's had a long legal career. Part of his legal career, Charles Cooper, lawyer for Attorney General. Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III. Part of the career of Chuck Cooper was defending Bob Jones University when its ban on interracial dating was challenged. Chuck Cooper, as a lawyer, stood up for an interracial dating ban. Anybody surprised that this is the guy that Sessions lawyers up with? Shit, they may have shaken hands on the lawyering agreement around the merry dancing flames of a burning cross. Jesus, really?
Everybody around Trump is dirty and stupid. I mean, if he's anything like that, Sekulow, is that his name? Jay Sekulow?
Sekulow, yeah.
Yeah, who says twice to Chris Wallace that, you know, Trump is being investigated for this, that, and the other. Then he's like, but I want to make it perfectly clear, he's not being investigated. But Chris Wallace is like, you know, what are you going to say, that he's a liberal? But this is what they're saying online, you know, that Chris Wallace is a liberal agent. Because he demanded, you know, why is Trump saying that he's under investigation? You just said twice that he's under investigation. Now you're saying that he's not under investigation and trying to twist this that I'm trying to make you say that he's under investigation when you just said that he is. Now, that seems unrelated to all the shit that I just talked about, but it is. We have a fucking, you know, socio-political climate now of so much uncertainty that you have Alex Jones on Megyn fucking Kelly and not you or not Malloy. You know, if you're going to pick anybody to has to, you know, who can talk a fucking reasonable argument, right? Or let's say a Randy Rhodes, who, you know, I mean, any goddamn buddy, Maddow, any motherfucking buddy. You know, you got Michael Parenti. There's a long line of goddamn intellectuals that I could fucking, you know, talk about that they could speak to. You know, I mean, what the fuck? From various communities, you know, just in goddamn North America. But, you know, this is who they give, you know, time to. First Putin and then Alex Jones. And then you got people telling me that, you know, you can't blame Russia for anything, even though Putin admitted after it's gotten to the point that he can't fucking not, you know, take credit for this shit. Well, some of us did it, but we didn't tell them to do it. They did it out of patriotism. But of course, you got people that don't want to admit that they didn't know what the fuck they were talking about. So they're still saying, oh, well, Russia's not that bad. I got into a fucking disagreement with three young black men, all under the age of 25 a few days ago, who still thought that Russia is communist. I'm not kidding.
Oh, I know you're not. And I saw an article earlier today about, you know, there's nothing to the Russia thing, blah, blah, blah. You know, Pooty Poot's a cuddly plush toy.
Even though Clinton won the fucking popular goddamn vote, you know, it's like she lost because of her policies. How the fuck did she lose if she wins the popular goddamn vote?
Well, because of one of those structures, that comes from our racist past and was designed specifically to confer power upon slave owners and slave states, the Electoral College. That's how she loses.
Yeah, but see, you will discuss this Malloy will discuss this. Brad Blog will discuss this. I haven't listened to this podcast in a while. But, I mean, you know, those of us who are regulated to the fucking internet, we discuss this all the time. But like I said, you know, you can get Alex Jones and Jack Blood and fucking, what's the other one? He's Joe Rogan and, you know, all of these libertarian-type fuckers. They give them all the goddamn airplay that they need.
Well, that's because their worldview aligns with the worldview of the corporate ownership.
The earth is flat. That's their that's their view.
If it sells soap, you're goddamn right it is. Because that's the bottom line, Angry. I don't know why this is so hard for me to get across to people. If there is a program on TV and it has commercials in it, if there's a program on TV and it has commercials in it, then the commercials are the content, okay? Everything else is just to keep you on there until the commercial comes along.
Well, and there's more, because I got into a hard argument with a Mexican family I knew several years ago, because the wife was saying, you know, they were immigrants. They've been here about 15 years or so. Their daughter was doing very, very well here in school. And it was like, well, you know, things are changing. And I'm like, well, I agree, but it's still not perfect. And we need to not rest on our laurels. And she goes, well, McDonald's has been doing a lot of commercials with Latinos. So I think that's showing that we're being accepted more and more. And I'm like, no, 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 no. I mean, even her husband was like, it sounds
goddamn, to me
like
that just shows they want to sell hamburgers to Latinos.
Right. Exactly. But that's not how she's reading it, which means that the propaganda is working. They like us because they put us in their ads. They like us because they have an Indian woman, you know, playing an FBI agent in this, you know, top rated sitcom.
Okay.
You
know, okay. Time out. We're going to shift gears for a minute, and we are going to get pop culturally shallow, Angry. Wonder Woman.
Oh, how far do you want to go?
Oh, I mean, we can get as shallow as a muddy hoof print on this one. I'm telling you, we can. So it turns out the woman who played Wonder Woman, which is raking in money hand over fist at the box office, was paid $300,000. Now, you and me, $300,000, I mean, we wouldn't sneeze at it, right? But for something that's doing what this film is doing, and the lead character got $300,000. Okay, so let's start with a conversation about pay equity and equal pay for equal work.
That's socialism.
And
you're talking to socialism.
But then we can move on to the fact that it's a glorification of war. Yes, it's a comic book movie, but it's a glorification of war. And guess what? And I don't know. I'm not plugged in enough to the intersectionalities to know whether this is true or not. But dang, don't you reckon that's going to make a lot? Okay, so there's room for complaint over
lots
over the fact that little girls are constantly bombarded, black, white, and all in between, with goddamn Disney princesses. And you know, that's it. Oh, what are you going to... Oh, I'm going to be a princess. And that's still going on, and there's pushback to that. So, okay, so here's an empowered female superhero in Wonder Woman. Yeah, okay, I see that side of it. She's not a princess. But It also stands as a placeholder for, hey, girls, y'all can be soldiers too.
Uh-huh.
Want to sign up? Especially because the woman who plays the lead in the film is a veteran of the Israeli IDF.
That's where I was going to go, because they've been pushing that she's a minority in some centers on the internet, because I haven't really seen any promotions here in Portland. But somebody in New York City told me that in some neighborhoods, they're pushing the fact that she's a veteran of the IDF. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I almost married a woman who served in the IDF. She was an Israeli. And the only reason I even understand the Palestinian situation is because she explained it to me. She was not, I don't want to say pro-Palestinian, but she recognized the fact that Palestinians had, you know, rights.
That they were like human beings.
And that, you
stuff.
Know, really. The human beings, as she said, is their goddamn land. We're visitors. I mean, that was her attitude. And that's what got her drummed out of the service. There's more resistance in Israel, Jewish resistance against this bullshit in Israel, than there is in the United States. And that's one thing I just wanted to point out. But they've been pushing the fact that she's an IDF veteran in one sense. But then in the other sense, they're putting on feminist, or they put on feminist boards and in feminist circles. They got the thing going on that here's this Jewish minority woman. And that, you know, the other characters, there's a Native American, there's all these minorities. And we're being very, very inclusive. And that she's just as much as of a minority as the others. Now, someone of Jewish descent, yeah, I'll say that. But at the same goddamn time, to raise that and push that with the Palestinian situation going on, the soldiering aspect, right? Because, you know, the same
Well, okay,
thing
let me interrupt for just a minute. I just want to interrupt with one question.
Yeah.
Could a Palestinian woman ever have been cast as Wonder Woman?
Well, let me ask you this, because I don't know. Who produced the film?
Offhand, I can't tell you.
Yeah, because, I don't know either. And that would be the defining character, because if they were simply looking for an actress. I mean, I've had debates with, you know, a couple of you know, brothers and sisters about this, because they were making the argument that there was speculation that the character would have been a black woman. For the hell of it or whatever, you know, like they want to make James Bond black. So somehow that eliminates the colonialism and the imperialism that he's defending. So we'll just wash everything away, make everything nicer. If we make the new Wonder Woman, a woman of color. And they went with this. Supposedly this was one of the compromises that somebody's telling me, you know, somebody's a screenwriter is telling me that's just what she got through the grapevine. And I'm just like, okay, fine. You know, you can go ahead and do that. But let's be honest. You just pointed out yourself. What does Wonder Woman stand for? It's like Superman, you know, the idea of coming to the United States and representing those values. Now, I grew up watching Linda Carter play, Wonder Woman, and I can understand the argument that we see Wonder Woman that way because of this model that we've been given psychologically and what have you, and it's got an emotional tie. I dig that. But, you know, what is really, you know, getting me is how... Like what you're pointing out, you got the pro-war aspect being pushed by someone who is being promoted as an IDF veteran and a Jewish.
Oh, there's a full-on PR frenzy going on in Israel. At the same time, the film is being banned in various Arabic-speaking
Arab
countries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One more thing. Okay. You know, we've been talking for a long time, and your background takes in a whole lot of different ethnicities, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's stupid, right? I mean, they're yours.
Well, depending on who you ask. But yeah.
I've got a question. Is there such a thing as cultural appropriation? As long as if the culture is not an oppressed or put upon or discriminated against culture?
If you're asking me politically, I would say that, you know, strictly speaking, without trying to speak for any particular group, because that's something you always have to be careful about, I would probably say, yeah. But then at the same time, as someone who's mixed and has to go through these different changes, I'm really up and down about it, because there are people who are sincere. I mean, I hate to say this. You know, I've met a lot of white folks, more that I can actually count, who had such a serious love for African art in Africa and in Haiti. I mean, the what I know, I actually learned a lot from them, because they were really serious about the history and had a serious respect for the people that it came from. It's the same scenario that's going in Japan. where you have white people from the United States, Canada, England, most of the Anglophone world, as well as Germany to a lesser extent, who live in Japan, the legal residence in Japan. They don't get citizenship very easily because there's a bias against white people in Japan for obvious reasons. But it's embarrassing to a lot of Japanese that they speak better Japanese than they do in many cases, that they uphold a lot of Japanese culture and ideology.
Well,
in that particular case,
I think there's a lot of reason why white European culture latches on to other cultural identities, because we have, and this is something that goes way the hell back, okay? We don't have much of our own.
And for a second, you know, I hear what you're saying, but I don't think that's true, honestly, because every society has a culture. Now, how developed it is.
Well, okay, no, hold on. Let me flesh this out for you. The historic long-term culture from which I come from,
Scots Irish, so people understand what we're talking about.
Well, but broader, the Celtic, okay?
Celtic, right. Mm-hmm.
And Scandinavian. And going back before even Jesus wanders onto the scene, that culture was brutally suppressed to the point of near genocide and destruction of its mytho-religious sociological order. The purging of the cutting down of the sacred oak groves and the purging of the priesthood, you know, by Caesar, since we were talking about Caesar earlier.
Yeah, talking about the Romans, yeah.
So everything becomes...
Well, remember his records?
Everything becomes an overlay then. So they overlay church, Holy Mother Church, onto the Vandals and the Visigoths and the Huns and the Franks and the Belgae and all of that. And the Picts and the Scots and the Angles and the Saxons and the Jutes and everything. This could be very easily misconstrued as some sort of weird white supremacy crap. It is precisely not that.
Not. Yeah.
But so, you know, the idea of Frenchness, okay, is a relatively modern idea. It's something that really doesn't take hold until like the 15th century. The idea of being English is a relatively modern idea. You know, it's Chaucer in the latter portion of the 14th century who makes English a language.
A language, yeah.
Dante writes in Italian and Plutarch in Italian? And that becomes... So I think you see what I'm saying, but to not get lost in those weeds. The reason I asked the question about cultural appropriation is because, okay, I understand Wonder Woman is a goddamn comic book, and expecting historical accuracy from a comic book is probably expecting a right smart bit too much. But still, it is premised upon a mythos that is very, very specific. Okay, Angry? The Amazons is a very, very specific mythology. You've got, for instance, the sister of the leader of the Amazons. She leaves the group and she goes to war side by side with the Greek hero king Theseus. Okay, of you know, the Minotaur and the labyrinth and all of that. But they are placed in time, in very much a Hellenic context. They live up on the. They were identified by the ancient sources as coming from an area on the Black Sea.
Yeah, I know where you're going with this, yeah.
And so there's a little bit of cultural appropriation going on in this particular instance that is largely being blown past, you know, because it's a comic book. But it's there. I mean, if... I don't know. I'm trying to... let's say Katy Perry was cast in a movie about Pocahontas as Pocahontas.
I can tell you, Native sisters would be livid.
Right.
So with the rest of us.
Right.
There's too many Indians out here for that shit.
Right.
But at the same time, as somebody who loves theater, an actor or an actress should be able to play whatever role.
Because it's theater.
Because of the social, political, you know. Yeah, because it's
that's
theater,
and
social,
that and that is ultimately
still political.
That's ultimately what I'm trying to loop back to. There's no cultural appropriation in Wonder Woman because it is mythological, and nobody can point to the actual existence of the Amazons. It was probably some atavistic fear born of masculine inadequacies in an early Hellenic culture. Okay.
Well, we're primarily, just hold on for 1 second so folks understand. The idea of all-female fighting organizations was not just in South America. The anti-slavery movement on the east coast of Africa was led by women.
South America? Like what about South America? What? The Amazon mythology arises out of the Black Sea.
I understand that, but it was applied in South America because of the same cultural appropriation. They didn't know how else to define these women who were fighting them back. So that's how they define them in their own literature. The same way I'm discussing these women in East Africa. They were defined as Amazons, right? When they found the women who were buried with their war implements and the men who were buried with cooking utensils in Siberia, they still defined them as Amazons, even though that's not really the case. It's just the same way when people are called shaman in South America or in Thailand, when that word does not apply. The differences culturally and spiritually, you know, I mean, geopolitically are totally different. That's why all of this is confusing, because, you know, my understanding of Amazon would be one thing, like probably most people. They tend to think in terms of South America. You're talking
right, because
about
of the name,
Black Sea.
Because of the name of the river. But the river,
which was named after this misunderstanding.
Right. The river was named because, you know, the same people who wrote signs on maps that said, "Here be dragons," said, "Oh, that's a goddamn big river, and there's some crazy natives up there. And they're probably just like the Amazons we've read about in Greek mythology."
Right.
And so...
they understood the trail.
That gets transposed over as a cultural overlay. And it becomes the Amazon River because there's some Amazons up the river, and they're just like those crazy-ass Amazon women in Greek mythology. But now I want to take this to... I want to loop it back around if we can. Actors must be... And when I say actor, I mean men and women. Because I don't believe in actor, actress, comedian, comedian, hero, heroine, bullshit. That genderized aspect of the language, just, you know, fuck it. Actors must be free to pursue their craft. And if somebody wants to put up Julius Caesar with a black Caesar... cool by me. If somebody wants to tell the story of Alexander Hamilton, who was arguably a pretty shitty human being, I got issues with Lin-Manuel Miranda, not over the way he wrote his play, but over what he did with Alexander Hamilton. But if somebody wants to do an all-brown cast of the Birth of the Constitution, good, because it makes it accessible. But Sauce for the Goose has to be Sauce for the Gander. if they take a look at the idea of Julius Caesar and decide, well, we're gonna stage this in modern dress, and we're gonna put them all in navy blue suits, and one guy's gonna wear a necktie that's tied way too fucking long because he's so insecure he wants his tie to point at his dick, and we're gonna give him an orange wig. Then that's okay too, because it's fucking art. So if Gal Gadot or however you pronounce her name, they want her to play Wonder Woman, cool. And no big deal to me. If James Bond is a black guy or a white guy, cool.
No, that's not cool. No, I can't go with that.
No,
it's because of what James Bond represents.
Well, okay, yeah, I get that. That's kind of a, but you get my overall point.
Yeah, I get the point, and I support that. But there is a social political thing on what images we see and how history gets rewritten and accepted. You know, if you make enough movies showing that the slaves really like, you know, like Gods and Monsters, that the slaves were suffering, that's as much as the owners during the Civil War. Because, I mean, my God, they just didn't know what to do. You can, you know, really convince an entire generation of young black people that slavery was actually beneficial for you and that you wanted it. You know, I mean, if you do enough of that, you can convince the people that, you know, their oppression was something that was necessary. I mean, how many times have we seen John Ford kill Indians? Six Indians fall off their horse from one bullet. I mean, you know, this is what all Native children grow up with. And it's something that we have to shake off because, you know, you start to believe that everything that happened had to happen. It just had to happen. It was inevitable. You know, there was no way we could get around it. You know, we were going to be colonialized. And we have to also, I think, be clear that the United States is not the center of the world. The same thing is happening in Tibet. You know, the same thing is happening in Mauritania. The same thing is happening in the Sudan. The same thing is happening in South America and the Philippines to indigenous people. You know, there's a lot of people being squeezed and pushed out, and their existence is being, you know, explained as, well, we need to get rid of you. That's the only way we're going to progress. If we don't remove you or change you,
yeah,
we're
sorry,
progress.
You got to go. Right. Yeah, it's exactly.
You got to go. You know, you're in the line of progress. I mean, like I said, you know, we're talking to somebody from Appalachia here. I've taken the time to understand the history of Appalachia. Is it racist? Yes. I've actually been up there, and I experienced a hell of a lot of bullshit. But the more that people were politically aware, the less I had the experience of that, right? Because then the situation was they dealt with me as a person. But
and the more people are educated.
The more people are educated. And see, and that's what a lot of folks are really. That's why the anti-intellectualism that we're dealing with, and we can't just put this on white people. You know, folks who are Latino, who are struggling to go to school, don't think that there's people saying, hey, man, you know, yeah, let's go. You know, you go. No, there's like maybe 30% of the people around them saying that. A lot of folks are just like, I can't get any better. Why are you trying to do any better than what you're doing? You know, we're being pushed down in a lot of different ways. And this is why representations in film and media, you know, just like when we were talking about the N-word. I mean, it's funny to me that, well, you can't say it in this context, but you can say it in music. You can say it on Empire, you know, on Fox, you know, network, right? The most anti-black network out there, but they got the number one black show in the world. These are contradictions that we need to look at. You know, I'm asking myself why people are okay with Redneck Wedding and some of these other, you know, I mean, it doesn't seem like it's respectable to me talking about your people. You know, they make you out that you're uneducated folks that will never learn, don't want to learn, don't want to leave the mountains and what have you. My wife and I were just watching a film, you know, the other night. It was very depressing, you know, what's going on in West Virginia and how this young woman is trying to save her family. And we don't talk about that. You know, I mean, the poor white experience in America isn't even discussed. So you get a jaundiced view where you have a lot of...
I got to be honest with you. I'm kind of sick of those. I'm kind of sick of those stories and sick,
you're
of,
sick
those
of those films,
films
right?
Because,
yeah,
because they're not,
I bet you are.
Because they're not being, you, they're not being made, and they're not being broadcast or distributed to make anything any better.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. they're being broadcast to make somebody some fucking money.
But how many people will say to themselves that your population is going through the same thing in terms of a film genocide, right? A cinema genocide as our generation. I mean, 50 Cent just came up with a new cable program called Power. Now, he's got all the money that could be, and obviously he's got enough pull to get something on TV. So what you do? You put up another gangster thing, right? About slinging dope, right? You know, I mean, where is this going?
Gets a little tiresome,
you
doesn't
and I
it?
It's tiresome. Because when we try to talk to people about what the hell is happening, these are the images that are rolling through their mind. Not a Lecce from Parenti. And I'm just bringing that name up, you know, not a lecture or breakdown.
And, you know, not anything substantive in terms of solutions. You know, I think about, because everything's a movie reference to me, Angry, you know that. one of my favorite, because I think it's got, I think it exists on a couple of different levels. I love that movie Galaxy Quest, where the aliens have been watching American TV and they think it's a reflection of reality. And so the cast of the old, you know, it's like it's a Star Trek sort of thing. The cast of the spaceship show, the space opera, winds up on the real spaceship, and the captain tells them, yeah, they've been watching the historical documents, like Gilligan's Island, you know, with a nudge and a wink and a look. And all of a sudden, he says, you know, like Gilligan's Island, and the alien captain looks up and says, those poor people. Yeah, every time I see something about Appalachia, and I mean, on the one hand, okay, great, people are going to learn something. Wonderful. But the other side of it is I just hear millions of people who are like the aliens on the spaceship in Galaxy Quest. Those poor people.
Hey, I shock people all the time when I tell them that Bobby Seale from the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense visited Appalachia, gave a speech, and the Patriot Party was the result. They were later smashed after the poor Washington, because the idea was they couldn't have these Appalachians politically aligning themselves with Black and Latino groups and feminist groups when they started to realize we're just as much an oppressed minority. What is our history? And that came out, and they got rid of it quick. You know, quick.
Yeah.
You know, and it's bad that a lot of us do not realize that these connections, you know, exist. It's not fair.
Well, all things being equal, it's been a lovely conversation. I know you got a roll, but I have appreciated it. We've gone all over the place, Angry, and that's never a bad thing. You know what I mean?
I don't think so.
I enjoy it.
And as usual, I'm going to give my usual spiel because I want folks to hear this. I know it's hard out here for everybody, but if you can't reach into your pockets and pull some coins out at all, please support the Bob Kincaid Show. Check out headonradio.com. Do what you can, and maybe we can turn the tide just a little bit in our direction. Peace.
See you, Angry. And Angry's right. We jumped right out there on Don's challenge, dadgummit. We did. We jumped right out there. And then it sort of faded. So we've still got $45 to go to meet Don's challenge, which will wipe out $200 of fundraising. And then we've got another $140 yet to go. All I can tell you is that this is the only way I know of to keep this program on the air. Night after night after night and week after week. And it's not, you know, this isn't a matter of, Bob wants a tin of caviar. It's about paying bills and keeping this going. So it would be awfully nice in the next 18 minutes of the program if we did not let a $100 challenge just blow by. Tracy very kindly put a $25 challenge on the table last night. Horst responded to it, and it blew by. A $50 challenge. Horst responded to half of it, and bupkis. These are kindly acts by people who value and know how many other people value the program. and it would be they're damn shame to let a $100 challenge just blow by. So there's that. So hopefully, like I said, next 17 minutes or so. Let's go check in with Scott and Punky. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob. I just wanted to check in with something, a couple of quick things, very quick things. One is, I definitely have to give hats off to all of the fans of comic books and fantasy and sci-fi movies. If it weren't for them, our economy here in San Diego would suffer. Because every July, like clockwork, like the swallows coming back to Capistrano, the aficionados of Comic-Con show up here in droves. I mean thousands of them every summer here in San Diego.
You know, one of my little intellectual exercises, I mean, I know about Comic-Con. My daughter Margie would dearly adore to go to Comic-Con. And I sit around engaging in the little thought exercise. Well, it's not even an exercise. It's more like thought play of what silly costume would I wear?
Now, there's a thought.
And the first and the first wise ass in the chat room that says Jabba the Hutt, I'm using the lightsaber. Okay, just saying.
I had an occasion as a child, maybe a 6 or 7 year old child. My great great aunt Emma, who I talk about from time to time,
yes,
bought me for Halloween, bought me a Superman costume. And I was a big fan of the Superman TV series. And for some reason, I had it in my little 6 or 7 year old head that by virtue of the costume, and especially the cape, it would imbue upon me superpowers beyond description. So I put on the costume one day, opened the front door, opened the screen door in front of the front door, and kept the porch door, the front porch door closed, started in the living room, got up a good head of steam, started in the kitchen, got up a good head of steam, ran the length of the kitchen, made a sharp right at the dining room, ran like hell through the dining room and into the living room, made a sharp left out the front door, which was open, across the front porch, and bam, right into the screen door to the front porch. And why I was not killed at that young moment in my life, I will never know. I damn near knocked the screen door off the hinges and created a family lore opportunity for my siblings and parents and aunts and uncles for years afterwards. My little Superman adventures that time. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. But it's
I was told the story in the past, and it took years before my parents ever confessed this to me. It was my mother in particular. When I was a little kid, so Adam West recently passed away. Batman is one of the first programs that I remember on TV.
Yeah.
That, Captain Kangaroo, vaguely recall Green Lantern, Gentle Ben, but Batman. And I really, really, really liked that show. And up at the Toy Mart, which my mother and I would walk up to the shopping center when my dad had the car going to work. In the window there, they had a Batman utility belt, Scott.
Ooh, ooh.
You're telling me. I wanted that thing. Damn, I wanted that Batman utility belt because you know, the imagination of a child, I mean, the world was opening. And there were pearls in the oyster.
Yeah.
And that was going to open up some real Batman stuff opportunities, that utility belt.
Well, yeah, the bat rope.
And here's where the batarang.
Yeah.
The bat grappler.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
all there. And so my mistake was, in my own childish, honest way, of looking at my mother and telling her precisely what I planned on doing if only I got that Batman utility belt.
Yeah, see, that was the flaw in your thinking.
I was headed for, Scott, I was headed for the roof.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I can see you.
And it was only decades later that my mother explained to me there was no way you were going to get that Batman utility belt. We tried to placate you with a Batman watch.
Yeah.
But I wanted that Batman utility belt. And it wasn't going to happen because they... And then, you know, they made the mistake of taking me to see Mary Poppins. And then the umbrella disappeared and I was off for the roof again. One of these things... I'm going to fly!
Yeah, and I'm thinking... And it doesn't matter whether it was the Batman scenario, the utility belt thing, or the Mary Poppins umbrella. See, your little flight of fancy would have ended with easily broken bones, if not worse. Jeez. Well, your mother was a smart woman.
And so there's a happy ending to the story. Ferg was a little guy, and I had told Agnes the Batman utility belt story. And since we were both, I mean, we were trying to be decent parents, so we knew that you know, Ferg started climbing the refrigerator as soon as he, or maybe before he actually learned to walk. So we knew what we were up against. So without me knowing it, one Christmas, Agnes bought not one, but two Batman utility belts. One Ferg-sized and one Bob-sized.
There you go.
And I looked at her and I said, I love you, and this may be the best Christmas gift I ever got, but the urge has passed.
Yeah. You know, and looking back on my childhood in the 60s, it's a wonder. I mean, it's a miracle that more of us weren't critically injured or just outright killed, you know, with some of the crazy shit that we used to do.
Well, but without moving into full-on geezerdom, I think, today's parents are far more careful than my parents were. Yeah. I mean, I spent the first 3 years of my life after I learned to stand up riding on the bench seat of the old Chrysler between my mother and father, standing on the seat with my elbow leaning on my father's shoulder, okay?
Yeah.
Ready to launch right through the windshield if anything went south.
Yeah, yeah. Seat belts, what are those? I mean, airbags, none of that. As long as you had a parent driving with a good right arm to extend out, or a mother as a passenger with a good left arm to extend out, you were okay in case of a quick stop.
But and there's a term for them now, I guess. They're called helicopter parents.
Yeah.
And I don't fully understand the meaning of the term. I got another friend who works in the restaurant industry who describes a different phenomenon that he sees sees there, and he calls them bumblebee parents.
Mm-hmm.
And bumblebee parents let their kids just just fly like little bumblebees, you know, all over the restaurant, and then they come and they pick them up and they set them down somewhere else and let them start all over again. And he says it's like watching a bumblebee.
Yeah. Well, listen, I want to tell you real quick the other thing.
Yeah.
Spoke. I've got a friend in Tulsa, Oklahoma, by the name of Pat Richardson. Now, when I lived in Tulsa for a year and a half or so in the mid-90s, Pat was on the radio. He was on not only one station outside of Tulsa, but he was linked up to a chain of three or four other stations all around Oklahoma with a program not unlike yours. He, like you, is a very, very smart, learned man who can talk 10 minutes about any topic you can throw at him. But the difference is he was a conservative, whereas you're not, okay? But I check in with Pat from time to time, and I hadn't talked to him since the election. And we had a stellar conversation last night for over an hour. And I would say there's maybe three things that we agree on in terms of politics. And the rest, we couldn't be more different. He's the only other conservative I talk to on a semi-regular basis. But my moment of hope and optimism and beauty was the fact that during the entire length of the call, neither of us saw cause to call the other an idiot or an asshole for thinking or believing what we thought or believed. And it gave me a little bit of hope because, and I've talked about this before on the show, and we've gone round and round on it, and as bad as conservative folks could ever possibly be, one thing I try not to do is lose sight of their humanity. And that goes, you know, even double and triple for my friend Pat, because, and my brother too, the guy, the young fellow with all the guns who used to be in the Secret Service, as far out loony, batshit crazy as they can ever possibly get in their thinking, I still love them, and I'm okay with them being who they are, because, you know, when it comes down to it, I mean, I understand the dangers at hand with some of the stances and opinions, but at least I can see where they're coming from, and by not getting into a screaming match, there's always that opportunity that something I say or do is going to register with them on some level, and even if it's only a thimbleful of opinion, it'll be one less thimbleful of right-wing opinion.
And I don't take that much issue with what you're saying, Scott.
Yeah.
The problem lies, I mean, look, if somebody needs help, odds are the help will be rendered. You hope. There are, of course, the historic accounts of people watching women get raped, watching people get murdered. It happens.
Yeah.
But we want to believe in the fundamental decency of people qua people. But there's a hardcore right wing out there. For instance, a story this evening, the bodyguard of some notorious right winger got stabbed 9 times by 2 guys who weren't black.
Yeah.
Well,
I read about that.
Yeah, so another white winger is now raising funds for his medical bills because he had no coverage, you know,
Well, Bob, that's freedom.
Right. But he's raising the money under the guise of he was stabbed for being white in L.A.
Yeah. Yet he was stabbed by people who were not non-white.
Precisely.
Wonderful.
Exactly. All right. I got to get out of here, Scott, but you have yourself a wonderful evening.
Okay,
we'll keep working on the on my Comic-Con costume.
Well, scale those buildings safely there, those low rises in West Vigod, Virginia.
You take care.
All right, Bob.
Bye now. Our buddy Scott in San Diego. A little bit of email to go to. First of all, thank you very kindly to everybody who responded. We have met, and we have exceeded, and we needed to exceed. We have met Don's challenge, and we have exceeded it. Thank you, and so thanks are in order for Craig, and for Frank. Thanks are in order for Judy. Is much, much obliged. And so consequently, we're down to only $95 to go to finish up Monday and Tuesday's fundraising. Thank you. And thank you, Don, for the original challenge. It is much, much appreciated. Note coming in. The Wonder Woman thing got people going. Michael and Madison said, I'll be honest, I've read some of the criticisms, but I love the film. But let's not forget, as with so many of these superhero films, executive producer Steve Mnuchin. Oh, yeah. And suddenly we understand why the woman made $300,000. Ron and Raleigh also pointed that out. Speaking of Wonder Woman, I was really bummed out when I saw the first name in the credits was Steve Mnuchin. Yes, that's Steve Mnuchin. He was the executive producer. And yes, by the way, as Ron and Randy at PA reminded me, Wonder Woman was an Amazonian princess. Ta-da! Yeah, well, you know, when they made the comic book, look, that's what comic books are modern mythology. It's not that big a leap. Is it? No. So thank you, everybody. We finished the program with only $95 to go in fundraising. Thank you so much for jumping in and knocking out the challenge. I really appreciate it. We all do. There really are a bunch of bills to pay. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Sparky, in the chat room. Thank you to our midweek utility chat room moderator, Steve from Georgistan, who is presently having something right next door to a conniption watching the Ossoff handle results come in. Thank you to John Fox and Ben Birch. Thanks, Ben, for looking into the stream issues today. Maybe we fixed some of them. Hopefully. Thank you, Ben. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and Coal River Mountain Watch on Facebook. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.